This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
From burnout and exhaustion to joy and fulfillment, through the act of serving consciously, it's time to rediscover your passion. It's live with Elizabeth and guests on the Contact Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Serving Consciously. As always, I'm so thrilled that you're able to join us again today. And as you know, if you've been listening for a while, I created what I call the Conscious Service Approach. And on each episode, we always explore some aspect of that. Sometimes we talk about it as a general idea, an energy, and we look at it through a number of different lenses. So how conscious service shows up in traditional formats, like traditional healthcare and human services, or alternative modalities like energy work or spiritual, healing treatments and modalities. And also as it relates to people who may be in the role of being a personal caregiver to a loved one or being in service to your loved ones. And so we look at it from a number of different perspectives. If you want to learn more about that, always be sure to go to servingconsciously.com, where I have lots of information and resources there for you. Today we're going to look at something that's a little bit more on the traditional side and also an area that affects so many of us in the world today. And we're going to look at what conscious service means and how it is expressed in mental health. Today, my guest is Linda Stalters. She's a retired advanced practice registered nurse and the CEO of Schizophrenia and Related Disorders Alliance of America, or SARDA, S-A-R-D-A-A. Linda has broad-ranging experience as a clinical practitioner, educator, advocate, organizer, and speaker. She's committed to driving improved patient care through education, patient advocacy, and clinical practice. Hearing Voices of Support is Linda's latest initiative to promote acceptance, support, hope, treatment, and recovery for the millions of people living with schizophrenia and related brain disorders. Welcome, Linda, and thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much to you, Elizabeth, for giving me the opportunity to talk about a very serious issue, a disease, and what we can do to help people.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a really jam-packed hour ahead of us. There's so much to talk about. I'm wondering if we could start just with, if you could share a bit with me and with the listeners about your journey and how you came to be doing the work that you're doing now.
Well, as you said, I'm a nurse by discipline, and I started a very long time ago. I started in ICU and CCU, med-surg, just the general medical floors, but I was always concerned about the psychic pain that people were experiencing, and soon realized that the people who have the most significant pain actually are the people who live with schizophrenia or other diseases that experience psychosis, and their families, because they are the most misunderstood and the most underserved people. And they're often ostracized by society. And so I really put my efforts into trying to help that population. And I found people to be so vulnerable, sweet, sincere, and kind, altruistic, and wise, contrary to the myths and misunderstanding that people have about people who live with psychosis. Of course, people can have really bizarre behaviors because of the symptoms, but fortunately, there's hope, there's treatment, and people deserve to have it and to receive treatment and kindness and compassion by other people, but we don't do that. And we just perpetuate the same way that we've treated people over the millennia that live with these torturous sometimes brain disorders.
Absolutely. And you know, a couple of things that you touched on. First of all, like I could just hear when you were talking about, you know, how you started out and then just as your curiosity and passion and compassion grew in a certain area, how you found for yourself, you know, your own calling from your heart about where you wanted to focus the kind of service that you were providing. And that's something that we talk about a lot when we're talking about conscious service and in this radio show for sure. And the other thing, and I had this as something I wanted to ask you specifically that you've touched on already. I noticed that the tagline for SARDA, I'm going to call it SARDA.
Sure.
It's shattering stigma and destroying discrimination. And you were starting to touch on that already. And stigma and discrimination have been longstanding barriers for people living with mental illness. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's your take currently on the role of stigma in mental health? Like, are we making progress or is it getting worse? What's happening in your mind?
Well, I think that we are progressing there. It depends on what particular illness that we're talking about. People are much more open to talking about depression and bipolar disorder, which is bipolar disorder, especially with psychotic features, is very closely related to schizophrenia. And even the pharmaceutical companies, when they advertise, they advertise for medications that help with depression and bipolar disorder. But so we're getting a little bit closer. There are more celebrities that are coming out and acknowledging that they live with certain illnesses, not so much with schizophrenia because it still is very much stigmatized. And the stigma is related to education because mm-hmm. people do not understand what it is, why people have it, and that these are not elected thoughts that people are having. These are genuine physiological diseases. Schizophrenia is never something that someone elects to experience.
No. And I think too, like you're touching on something I think is so important as well, that lack of education or our ignorance about anything often generates fear, right? And what we don't understand, we get afraid of, and especially, you know, if it's something that that has features to it that could be particularly alarming, or you know, that we're not sure of what to do. And so I think that's also a really big aspect of stigma. And you know, it's kind of like if we keep it over there, it's not actually happening. I don't have to worry about it ever happening to me, you know, and just kind of ignore that it's even present. But I agree. I mean, I think that more and more there is discussion, maybe not so much about schizophrenia, like you said, but discussion out there that's opening the lines of communication so we can talk about mental illness, at least in general. But it scares people, I think. It's a scary kind of thing to go through.
Exactly. And it's the lack of understanding, the lack of education that perpetuates the discrimination. And it is the discrimination. A person with schizophrenia does not receive the same treatments, care, concern, rights and privileges that other people would receive. Our tagline used to be shattering stigma, realizing recovery. And then we sort of went to the, destroying discrimination, because that is what really prevents someone from receiving care and treatment.
Yeah. And
60% of the people who are homeless live with schizophrenia or mm-hmm. psychosis. Mm-hmm. And such a large population of the incarcerated. And we don't incarcerate someone who has another neurological disorder that the symptoms realize behaviors that are not what we would desire, and even sometimes combative. Someone who lives with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. We don't lock people up in a jail or prison because they assaulted someone due to their irrational thought process inherent in Alzheimer's disease.
Exactly.
But schizophrenia is a neurological disease, and unless treated, the delusions and hallucinations can lead to aberrant behaviors that no one wants to experience. And, you know, once someone is medicated, they receive medication and treatment, which is more than medication, they realize what has happened during their psychotic episode, they are so, you know, they're traumatized by this. And they are the victims as well. And I know no one wants to hear that. But when something awful happens that is just blown up in the news, the poor person who didn't receive treatment and their families have been begging for treatment and they can't get it, they are all victims.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When I go to a funeral for someone who has died at, you know, very young age, maybe 23, 19, 20, 26, 29, because of their symptoms related to schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar disorder, I cry for not just them, their families, but the whole millions of people who are out there really challenged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. It almost seems like, you know, schizophrenia, but also just mental health in general, mental health addictions, it's almost like it's hitting epidemic proportions. And maybe it is because we're noticing it more because we're talking more, but it really feels like that, you know, that area, mental health and addictions are, I would say that it's probably one of our most, our number one issue in healthcare and human services.
Right. Well, absolutely. Psychiatric disorders are all neurological, including substance abuse and alcoholism, which is also a substance. It's all because of what's happening in the brain. But the most profound and the most costly is schizophrenia. And oftentimes people are what we call dually diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And really there are multiple diagnoses that someone who's living with psychosis, they might turn to some substances instead of treatment because they can't get it. And then they have another diagnosis of substance abuse or substance dependence.
Absolutely.
And so it just snowballs. And then they have other physiological disorders as well. People in general who have a serious psychiatric, neuropsychiatric disorder die on average 25 years sooner than the general population.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. That's a huge amount of time.
Absolutely. And you know, we talk about the suffering of the person who's diagnosed, but the families.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
And I want to get into that, but I wonder if it might be a good idea if you could share a little bit. I mean, you have been, but give maybe our listeners some really specific kinds of descriptions that would help people to understand what schizophrenia is. Like, how does it, what's going on neurologically and how does it show up? What do people experience? What are some of the treatments that people might access? The barriers to that?
Right. Okay. So
five questions for you.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, really quite a bit, you know, is inherited. There's a genetic predisposition often, maybe we're finding brain trauma wherever someone's brain might in development been impacted. It could have been in utero, perhaps the mother was exposed to a particular virus or something that impacted the developing brain. It's the developing brain that it changes the neurotransmitters within the brain and because the synapses aren't there. And so there's a neurocircuitry disorder that's happening. So the synapses helped the brain neurotransmitters to talk to one another so that there's not the communication within the brain that is functioning properly. So it could be because of the genetic predisposition, brain trauma, a significant traumatizing experience that changes the developing brain. Mm-hmm. So usually a person will have what's called a prodromal period, and that could be in early adolescence. But I know a lot of people who say that they had experienced some symptoms when they were children, young children, but they were diagnosed with something else because they couldn't communicate what they were experiencing. So one woman explained to me that she felt like it was a cloud or a shadow that was following her. Or they do hear voices, or then, you know, people think, well, that's just childhood. That's your childhood friend, you know, that we talk about, but it's different and it's scary for them. But generally someone in their adolescent period, maybe 16, 18, 19, they might start being more isolated. Their grades might drop and their cognition might be impaired. They may not be able to pay attention as well. They might not be able to follow through on directions. So some of these things might be due to hearing voices or some other sounds that are distracting. And the voice can be one voice. It could be multiple voices. It could be two people talking above them. But oftentimes the voice is kind of talking to the person and describing things that are happening in the third person that they're doing, like you're going to open the door, or that food is poisoned, or something like that. And sometimes the voices can be actually companions to people. They might even say some good things, but most often, they're really awful, just terrible voices that are telling them awful things about themselves or about other people. And then they can have paranoia so that they suspect things. So students might think that the other students are talking about them, or the teachers are plotting against them, mm-hmm. or they might feel things on their body, like sensations, any sensory organ, because they're all neurological, right? They can have aberrant sensations, like they might smell things that aren't there. They might taste things differently, very differently. They might have a taste in their mouth that really is not correlated to what they might be eating, or they might feel things. They might even see things that aren't there. That's not as frequent as hearing the voices, having delusions, which they have a belief system that's not based on reality, and that could be paranoia, like I explained. You know, they could be walking across the street and somebody could be laughing across the street, that people they don't even know, and they think that they're laughing about them. So of course, if you think that everyone's looking at you and laughing about you or talking about you, you don't want to go out and you don't want to be seen in public. So you can have, people sometimes have these grandiose ideas that they might be a deity, like Joseph or Michael the Archangel, or even Jesus or Muhammad, or so they have these thoughts that they have these special powers, and it's interesting with the paranoia. in the U.S., it's the CIA or the FBI that they're either working with, working against, or they're after them. Or in Russia, it was the KGB or wherever they are. It's whatever government organization. When I worked at the in D.C., sometimes, you know, the CIA or the FBI was on our unit because the patients would sometimes call the White House and say, I have a special message for you, or I have to tell you something, or it's, you know. And yeah. And how horrible it is to think that something you might have done, like open the door the wrong way or think the wrong thought, might have caused a tsunami across the world and caused the deaths of so many people. I mean, these are some of the thoughts, the delusions that they might have. And they don't want to take meds, perhaps, because, well, number one, they might suffer from another neurological disorder called anosognosia. And that's where they don't perceive that they are ill, that anything is wrong. I mean, the delusions are absolutely real to them. Mm-hmm. When they hear the voices or other things, they actually hear them. There's the, they're hearing that. We can see in the PET scan that the Broca center of the brain where we're hearing things is working just like when we're actually hearing things for a person
wow.
who is hearing things that aren't there. So, mm-hmm. so it's so complex.
And it's so common, isn't it, too, that people may take medication. And then perhaps there's some alleviation of symptoms, but then maybe, like you said, they're experiencing other side effects or there's other things going on. And so they want to stop the medication because there's an aspect. I know that that's quite common with people who have bipolar.
Yes.
Because they miss the, because everything becomes sort of neutral and flat, you know?
Well, that's the case for someone who has bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. But for someone with schizophrenia, oftentimes, if they are paranoid and they have auditory hallucinations that the medication is poisoned
yeah.
or that someone is, you know, trying to control them, mm-hmm. that's part of it. Also, if they miss their meds for 3 days, they are down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And they just slide into the same delusions or worse and hallucinations, and then it takes a long time before they can realize they really do need those medications. And sometimes, you know, it is so sad that people become so frustrated with that psychic pain and going over and over. And sometimes they take the medications, then they do take their medications and they work for them and then they stop working for them. And then they start having the symptoms again. And then they just don't want to go through it another time.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking, like such a cycle, you certainly can see how people would start to want to self-medicate.
Yeah.
To try to soften that or to find some way of feeling better. When you mentioned that, you know, it was common for many people experiencing schizophrenia to, you know, have a much higher mortality rate, die 25 years sooner than the general population. What are the reasons for that? Is it because people die by suicide? Is it because of behavior that leads them into risky situations? What's often happening there?
Well, there's several things, and they found that, you know, research, they're doing a lot of research. People don't realize there really is a lot of research going on, and they have found that people who even, who have not taken medications have higher cholesterol
okay.
to start with, mm-hmm. because some people say, oh, well, it's because of the medications. Well, indeed, medications can cause some metabolic disorders, but even without starting medications, there are changes, and there are changes within the brain before starting medications.
Mm-hmm.
And every psychotic episode causes more degeneration of the brain. So it's really important that people take medications and do different things to ease those psychotic episodes. But also, suicide is one, because at least 40 to 60% of the people attempt suicide, and many succeed. Mm-hmm. At least 10 to 12% succeed. But also with the metabolic disorders that cause cardiovascular disease, weight gain is huge, reduced exercise and activity is part of the disease, and the medications are sedating as well. They also find a lot of ease in their anxiety with smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Many smoke, and so therefore all of those risks are involved as well. So they get about 15 minutes of relief from the anxiety smoking, and so therefore you see them smoking a lot. And unfortunately, way back when we used to reward people, we've come a long way, but not terribly long. We used to reward people for good behavior. Well, it's not a behavioral health issue. It's a brain illness. It's a brain health issue. Their behavior isn't, you know, it's because of the symptoms. So you've got to relieve the symptoms before they can relieve their behavior. Anyway, we used to give them cigarettes. We'd have a cigarette break every 30 minutes. And if you were quote unquote good, you'd get a cigarette. And then, you know, now we've eliminated the cigarette smoking on the units. And, you know, the older patients would say, okay, you got me started smoking and now you're not going to let me smoke.
Totally. Oh my gosh.
We're, you know, just so much. And
I love what you said there, though, that this focus on, you know, the behavior, like rewarding behavior as though somebody's just acting this way.
Right.
And I think that's a huge point to really highlight, because I mean, that's obviously related to stigma and discrimination too.
Yeah.
That people
yeah.
can just stop doing what they're doing. I mean, people say that about people with addictions all the time too. Oh, then just stop it. They're doing it to themselves.
Yeah.
But it's not, that's a lack of understanding about what's actually going on, right? So.
Exactly. That's why we have the brain campaign. We want people to stop calling these behavioral.
Yeah.
Health. As a matter of fact, we don't even like the term mental health. It's it's a neuropsychiatric disease, illness, or disorder. Because that too, when you say mental, you think, oh, well, that's just an existential way of believing or thinking, but it's your brain.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
What's causing the thoughts and the feelings and the behaviors. You know, we don't tell people to stop their cardiac arrhythmia. We don't say, just stop that AFib. Just stop it.
And I think that's so very true. And thank you for making that point, because I think that maybe that'll be, I love focusing on the power of language and making sure that we're saying what we actually really mean and being accurate and correct in the messages that we're sending. And for sure, I think that, you know, I mean, mental health, mental illness, we've used that for so many years now, and people have a certain understanding of what that is, which can actually take us away from really understanding what's going on. Beautiful point. Let's take finish your thought.
I was just going to say, and this is going, that's why we also want to reclassify schizophrenia, and we can talk about that after your break.
Okay, that sounds really good. Okay, let's take a quick break then, and we'll be right back, and we'll pick up where we left off. You're listening to Serving Consciously. I'm here with my guest, Linda Stalters. I'm Elizabeth Bishop, and we'll be right back after this break.
Is part of your life mission to be of service to others? Making a difference in the world is a tall order. You are the resource when it comes to serving humanity. Beyond taking care of yourself, learn to create self-connection in your life. Integrate who you are with what you do. You will find a source of inspiration and energy that surpasses your wildest imagination. Register for the Self-Connection Series at www.elizabethbishopconsulting.com. Look under Programs and Services for details. Ready for a little inspiration? How about a moment in time to reflect, reframe, and rejuvenate? Join Elizabeth Bishop for Serving Consciously, a new radio show airing on the second and fourth Friday of every month at noon Pacific. Tune in to learn about the conscious service approach. And find out how you can integrate who you are with what you do in service to others. Call in and speak directly with experts in the field and find out how they've discovered the joy of serving consciously.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Serving Consciously. I'm your host, Elizabeth Bishop, and today we're talking with Linda Stalters. We've been talking about schizophrenia specifically and also about the different organizations and initiatives that Linda is involved in. And so we've got quite a few more things we want to get into here. But one of the things right before break, Linda, that you were mentioning is around the reclassification of schizophrenia. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, as we talk about the mental health system and how really it's a barrier to treatment, and there are many facets of that, but when someone is going through trying to assess what is happening in their life and trying to get a diagnosis, once they are diagnosed with schizophrenia, well, they go to a clinician and they're all immediately relegated to mental health. And so they don't get the same treatment. They aren't listened to. They don't get the same workup. They, and that's also, we talked earlier about earlier, demise. If someone is complaining of something and they're not heard, about, heart condition, breathing, whatever, and the clinician says, oh, well, they have schizophrenia, and just kind of brush it off. But if we feel like if this is reclassified as a neurological disease, which it is, and we have evidence of that all kinds of places, and NIMH calls all of the psychiatric disorders brain illnesses, which they are, and we know that these are neurocircuitry disorders that someone with schizophrenia is experiencing, and that's leading to their symptoms, then it could be under neurology but treated by a neuro clinician, neuropsychiatrist, someone who specializes in neuropsychiatry, so that they get an overlapping of research, mm-hmm. of treatment, mm-hmm. of assessment, so that they have a more comprehensive treatment so that they can really get well. And there is a problem with our, you know, we can't get beds. Well, the reason why we can't get beds and people spend days, sometimes weeks, in the emergency room is because of what is called the Institutions for Mental Diseases exclusion. And after they closed the state hospitals, they said that you could only have 16 paid by federal funds beds within the hospital. Well, if they were neurological beds, then they could circumvent that IMD. Mm-hmm. And so there are just many different areas, and the stigma, I think, would be reduced because it's a neurological disease. And exactly. Also, even within the professions, psychiatry isn't the highest regarded specialty, which is ridiculous because our brain is the most important organ of our body, and that's where this needs to lie. So we're working to plan our strategy, and we're going to go to our Congress and senators and talk to them and go to the different committees and try to get recoding so that people can get treated appropriately. So that is a big thing that we're doing right now, and trying to get other people on board with that. All the scientists that I talk to, they go, oh my gosh, of course it is. And when I went to an international conference a couple of weeks ago and I talked to somebody in the UK, and they said, oh, we already treat schizophrenia as a neurological disease. And some of the scientists that were coming up to me, they were saying, and I would talk to them about this, and they say, well, isn't it already classified as a neurological disease? No, it's not. So, wow. We're working on that. We have a consulting firm that's working with us in DC, and we're gonna get this done. Some people say, oh my gosh, that's a big, huge goal. And I said, but it won't happen if we don't get it started, and I'm starting it.
That's beautiful. And you know what? It takes people like you who have that passion and, you know, curiosity and desire, you know, to push those things and to keep on going with it to make those things happen. Absolutely. Thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of money, and we're going to work on it. And I got to get more money, but we'll do it.
You will. And you know, as we were talking about earlier, and it sort of, you know, sort of touched on another aspect of something I wanted to explore with you when you were talking about, you know, accessing the hospitals and accessing the systems and all of that. We talked about the fact briefly earlier that schizophrenia and other brain-related disorders, or even other mental illnesses, I'm using quotes in the air, right, are one of those healthcare challenges that, like you said, don't affect just the person, but impact the family and other loved ones around that individual. And there's often a lot of other supports. I mean, like you said, somebody might be homeless who's living with schizophrenia, and so there's often different supports that they might be accessing, you know, from a social services or human services perspective as well. So it's one of those areas that really require that strong connection and partnership between formalized supports and informal supports and family members and loved ones. And I wonder if you could just speak a bit about that from your experience, and maybe share with us what you see as you know, things that help to strengthen those relationships and between the professionals and the loved ones who are supporting someone with mental illness.
Well, that's interesting. You know, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Bill was partially included in the 21st Century Cures Bill that passed a few months ago. But the big pieces that Tim Murphy from Pennsylvania had written into that bill originally that did not pass was relaxing the HIPAA law so that families could talk more openly and the clinicians could talk more openly with the families so that they could actually help their loved one. And mm-hmm. So Tim Murphy is reintroducing that. So being able to communicate. So when a person who is diagnosed is thinking more rationally and the family member can get a release of information signed at the clinician's office by their loved one who's diagnosed as soon as possible. That is really very important. But people don't realize that you can talk to the clinician and tell them things.
Yes.
And it's really important to write it, email it, whatever, so that there's documentation that you told the clinician something. Now, they may not feel like they have the flexibility to respond much, but they can if there is safety involved. But that is something that people need to know. And to get a psychiatric advance directive written by the person when mm-hmm. they're feeling capable of doing that, to say, well, if I stop taking my meds and I have a relapse, this is what I want you to do.
Yes.
These are the meds I don't want. These are the meds that help me. I don't like this clinician. I do like this one. I don't like this facility. I do like this one. Those are things that aren't always followed by whoever it is, but the family needs to have that so that they can fall back on that a bit, just like any medical advance directive. It's really important. The HIPAA law is just so complex and so not helpful for people. If someone had Alzheimer's, the clinicians would talk to you.
Yeah. And that's the thing, just for people who are listening, the HIPAA law, I can't remember the exact, what it exactly stands for, but you're talking about the Freedom of Information and Privacy Act mm-hmm. that we would call it here in Canada. Right. That really can create a barrier. And I like those are really practical kinds of things that families can put into place, because navigating healthcare systems and social support and services systems for someone you love who's facing any kind of a challenge medically is a huge process to go through. And if you don't know, for family members, if people don't know how to do that, or who to call, or how the system works, you can get lost really, really fast.
And someone is really very fortunate to still have, that's why people need to be treated early, early on.
Yeah.
So to know if there are any risk factors in your child's life, were mm-hmm. there people in your family that, were very eccentric or they may not have been diagnosed with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, but to know that there were some things in the family, and if there were some brain trauma or whatever, to watch your child and be aware. And I'm sorry to say that even pediatricians aren't aware of what to watch for sometimes. And it can be, often people are are diagnosed with something different early on, and then the diagnoses change as symptoms appear. But I went off on a tangent. I was going to say something else, but the families are the de facto caregivers.
Yeah.
And people who are homeless, they don't have anyone. Mm-hmm. And they are absolutely eligible, even in the U.S. and Canada, for treatment, but they can't navigate getting to wherever they need to get to.
Absolutely.
And so that is so sad. We spend all this money to get people who are capable of accessing care, but we really need to spend more money on helping people who can't, who aren't capable, who mm-hmm. keep ending up in prison or homeless.
Yeah.
They're the ones who need help. We treat the people who are the most capable.
Yeah. It's certainly an area where people fall through the cracks over and over and over and over again.
Right. So for families, we, you know, people need their own support system. They mm-hmm. have to be educated. They need a support system. There are several different ways to get support. There are counseling and educational things online. We have conference calls for family members every Tuesday night, and you can reach that internationally. It's on our website. And it's just run by and for people who have family members. And we have support groups for people who live with schizophrenia as well. But, you know, NAMI has family-to-family educational systems. And it's very important for a person to have respite, to understand that it's not their fault. You know, we used to call mothers the schizophrenogenic mother. And mm-hmm. even if it's genetic, it's not your fault any more than heart disease that is genetic is anybody's fault. It's a draining situation, and you need,
absolutely,
you need support, you need counseling, education. So
absolutely. Yeah. So listeners could go to SARDA, that's SARDAA.org, right?
Correct. Yes.
In order to find some of those support groups you're talking about and links to other resources, I went on there myself, and there's just a ton of information there. So I would really encourage listeners who are, you know, resonating here with what we're talking about today to go and check that out as a resource.
I would also encourage them to look at once you get on our website, you can go to our other microsite, or you can go directly there to hear some powerful, short, very professionally done videos of people that tell just like, you know, for 2-3 minutes, a little bit about what they experience as someone who's experiencing psychosis or their family members. And that there's something positive that they yes. provide, some direction, what is helpful, and then encourage people to provide a voice of support yourself, to share those, because that's how we educate people that it isn't all these terrible things that we hear, although that happens if people aren't treated, but people have hope.
Yes.
People can lead a meaningful, purposeful life. I know people who have PhDs, MDs, CPAs, social workers, nurses, you name it. They are living with schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or bipolar disorder, and they are professionals and having a beautiful, meaningful life.
And contributing and all of that. So is that hearing voices of support that you were just talking about?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, because I was looking at that too, and just, yeah, nice short little videos of people telling their personal story. And I mean, that is often some of the most powerful ways I think that we can learn, is to just actually listen to people who are living an experience. And that really helps us to start to understand what might actually be going on for people and how we can support that process.
Absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead, Linda.
No, you go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, I know that you're very actively involved there with the SARDA and with the Hearing Voices of Support. What other, and all the other things that we talked about here that you're doing with reclassification and everything else, is there any other initiatives or things like that are happening that you want to share with the listeners before we wrap up today?
Well, since you're in Canada, but you I know you have U.S. citizens, I know that Tim Murphy is reintroducing some of the pieces of the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis bill to help with the HIPAA and some other initiatives. And, of course, just contacting your Congress, your legislators, your parliament, your local communities, to find out what is going on, educate the people. You know, if you go and you speak publicly, you can show our videos from HVOS, Hearing Voices of Support, and just enlighten people. and to let them know what are some of the symptoms, what are some of the risks. Talk to the clinicians and pediatricians and, you know, make sure that they know what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's such a, also one of the things that, NIMH, National Institute of Mental Health and some other organizations, research organizations are, in need of, and this is a touchy topic, but, brain tissue. So when someone, dies, if their brain can be, donated for, research, mm-hmm. it not only helps people with schizophrenia, but other neurological disorders. And people don't realize that, you know, MS, Alzheimer's, you know, they're all kind of related. They're all within the neurological system. And when we find something out about one thing that we're researching, if they're trying to collaborate all their research on the central nervous system so that it can help with other diseases. So, you know,
sign the donor card. The brain.
And if you say you're going to donate, you have to be specific about your brain.
Yes.
People don't know that.
So tell people what they need to do.
Well, you just need to, if you go to NIMH and, mm-hmm. you can go on there and we put out a newsletter as well. If you go on our website and, opt in for the newsletter, it's electronic and we always put up there what NIMH is searching for and they can tell you how you can opt in to donate a brain.
Okay.
Brain tissue. That's
wonderful. Because the brain is such a complex and mysterious.
Yeah.
Part of our existence, and you know, the more that we can understand about that, and like you're saying, treat these different kinds of disorders that people experience. I mean, the better off we'll all be for that.
Right, and like I keep saying, you know, early intervention is important, mm-hmm. and it isn't just medication. It's, you know, cognitive therapy. There are different kinds of therapies now. There's brain stimulation that is helpful, and supportive therapy, coaching with work or education, and having the young person decide what they want to do. And not, you know, you don't have to say, oh, well, we're treating your schizophrenia, but helping you with what you're experiencing. We're going to help you cope with what you're challenged with.
Yes.
And the family should not just keep pounding in, well, you've got schizophrenia, you know, or and it's important that you don't try to talk someone out of a delusion and,
there's a lot, right? A lot of support that families and loved ones and, you know, and individuals themselves can gain from, you know, being involved in these different services that you're providing and resources that are out there in order to know how to live with this.
Right.
You know, and have some quality of life and be able to manage for everybody that's involved and in impacted by,
right.
by that individual situation. So I think that's huge information to share with our listeners. So again, and just for everyone to remember, I will be posting all of Linda's contact information. So these websites that we're talking about as well, you can find Linda on Facebook, at Hearing Voices of Support when you go there and on Instagram the same way. And you're also on Twitter, right?
Correct. At
SARDAA
_org. Right.
So again, SARDA is SARDAA.org, the website, and hearingvoicesofsupport.org, which are linked together. I really encourage people to go there and look at all of the information and beautiful resources and opportunities to share and support each other and to access support at those sites. Linda, did you want to share anything else as we're wrapping up here?
Well, I just want to thank you so much, Elizabeth. brain disorders are still, I mean, we're moving ahead with research, but the brain is the most complex organ of our body. And, you know, HIV was so discriminated against, you know, many years ago, but now we talk about it. People have long lives. People who sometimes live a full length of life. Because of research, because of eliminating that stigma and discrimination, we can do the same thing regarding psychosis and schizophrenia.
Yes. Hallelujah.
We just need to do that.
We do. So let's keep the conversation going. Let's keep it open and access what we need. And Linda, I want to thank you not only for being here today and sharing all of this information with us, but for all of the work that you're doing and the passion and energy that I can hear in your voice for the service that you're offering in the world is huge. And I want to thank you for that and just contributing to making things better for people who are living with these disorders and for their family members. Thank you so, so much for being here today with us, Linda.
You're very welcome and thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and joining us. And again, remember, you can go to servingconsciously.com. That's my website. I'll have the link to the replay when it's ready, as well as all of Linda's information there for you to access. And thank you so much for tuning in and being here with us again today. And we will see you next time. You've been listening to Serving Consciously. I'm your host, Elizabeth Bishop. Have a beautiful weekend.
You've been listening to Serving Consciously with your host, Elizabeth Bishop. Consciously create your approach to work. Visit www.elizabethbishopconsulting.com. Join us on every second and fourth Friday at noon to continue rediscovering your passion.